All right, folks, welcome to Nino's Corner.tv. I am with Randall Reeder. This guy was a former wrestler, and he's an actor and a minister. This guy's seen it all, folks. And look at him. You just look at him. He looks like a real tough guy. I got to tell you that right now. So are you, man, first of all, Randall, thank you so much for joining me. It's a privilege.
It's an honor. It's an honor for me, man. I love your stuff, man.
Oh, thanks, bro. Now, that means a lot to me. So, folks, just to say, okay, you may have seen this guy in Sons of Thunder, Deadpool, Deadpool 2, Deadpool and Wolverine. And is that Deadpool 3 right there, Deadpool and Wolverine?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that's out in theaters, one of the biggest movies on the planet right now. So
Sin City, 21 Jump Street. And you know what, man? When Andy hooked us up on over text, I was like, I recognize that guy. I've seen him in the movies. You know, you're that face. Yeah. He recognizes you. You know what I mean?
That like, guy. I'm that guy, man. It's like, hey, you're that guy, right? From TV.
And you can't miss you. How big are you?
I'm 6'7", man. About 6'6½". You know, gravity or buoyancy and density, whatever.
Damn.
You know, it's a bitch because, yeah, I used to be 6'8", standing flat-footed, barefooted. And, you know, just, you know, time wears the joints away, I guess. So I'm about 6'6½", maybe 6'7" now.
So I'm going to show some of your highlights, if you don't mind, man, because I think
of course.
You play some epic roles, dude. Randall Reed, actor real, folks. Get a grip of this. This is awesome. Here we go.
Okay, I'm fine.
You know what FINE stands for, Wade? Fucked up. Insecure, needy, and emotional.
We got more stick to shoot.
Looks like you're fixing to run. You better run better than you play pool. I say we go raghead. Cut this thee's hand off.
All right.
What you want?
Cheers.
I did that.
Buck, you best apologize before. Yeah. That.
Say the magic words, Fat Gandalf.
I'm sorry.
Both of us.
I don't have a filter between my brain and my ego.
Okay. Hey, ho. Hakuna has taught us. I'm sorry. Get out of here. Go. Go cast a spell.
For the buy-in.
That was a gift.
I got a feeling the gifts from you come with strings. And I don't keep what's not mine.
You know, stranger, you won a bit tonight. Why don't you do us another favor? Cash out and leave.
You don't want me leaving without my keys. Wrong people see your nephew riding around on that bike. They'll tear this town apart.
These folks are your friends. Are they your enemies?
Does it matter?
Is this some sort of weird dream?
I'm a giant rabbit playing hockey against a vacuum cleaner in your living room. Don't you think that would be impossible and insane if you weren't having a weird and unsettling dream?
I don't know what that means.
It means that you've got a heart made out of old snow tires. Because when the Pirates of the Mississippi hit the course to feed Jake...
Dude, this is just too much. This is just too much. I mean, oh wow. I mean, and let me tell you, folks, this guy. Let's just start it with how you got started. So, it says here you're a plumber. You still are.
Yeah, third generation plumber. My father and my grandfather are plumbers. My brother's a plumber. I'm a plumber. Half my cousins and everybody's plumbers. Yeah, we got come from that business. But yeah, at 18, man, I at night I didn't have to sleep because I was 18. And I was working concert security in Houston, Texas, and I worked at a wrestling match and at the Coliseum, at the Houston Coliseum, and Sam Houston Coliseum, and this guy walks up to me and says, "Hey man, you should be a wrestler." I was working ringside, and I said, "Yeah, that's what everybody says." He's, "Man, I'm not everybody." He hands me a card and says, "You need to call my stepdad tomorrow." And his stepdad was Ivan Putski, the Polish Power. And
wow.
And so I did the next day and went over and seen him. Anyway, I started wrestling with him.
So you started at 18.
Yeah. I called him and he said, "How'd you get my number?" I said, "Oh, your son gave it to me." And he said, "Well, class started, you know, 2 weeks ago. So you have to wait till the next quarter or whatever." And he says, who told you to call me? Who gave you this number? I said, your son. And he says, how big are you? I said, I'm 6'8". He says, well, how much you weigh? I said, about 320. He goes, why don't you come over and see me this afternoon? And so I did. And he said, well, you know, it'll be brutal, but if you want to try to catch up, you know, and catch up with these guys, they're 2 weeks, you're 2 weeks ahead of you. You can start tomorrow. And I did. And I did. And I was, you know,
I am, you know, I used to love wrestling when I was a kid. Obviously every kid did. Right. And, you know, but I went the boxing route, obviously.
Yeah.
But how hard is it? Is that considered like starting late at 18 in wrestling, in professional wrestling, or is that
That's about right. I mean, that's about when most people, other than the legacy kids, start. You know, I mean, like, you know, the Hearts or any of them guys. I mean, because they're working, you know, because their parents own the organizations or own the schools or whatever. But no, pretty much 18 is probably about the right time. You know, because, you know, towards the end of my career, like, you know, I was and reaching about 30 at 29, and I was getting long in the tooth. I mean, they were just for WWE or somebody to sign me. They were like, I don't know, we're not going to get much years out of him. He's, you know, been in the Bush Leagues, beating the hell out of his body for all this time. And so, you know, I almost went a couple of times, but it was, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy story. I mean,
it's the same with boxing, man. By the time you're 28, 29, you really are. Yeah. If you're not already at a certain level, that's kind of your prime. But it's also the window of when you should be getting out.
Right.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Because 30, you're old. You're an old man in sports, man. I mean, what is it? The life of an NFL player is like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Fighters, I mean, you only have your prime for about 2 years. And that's, I would imagine that's the same in wrestling.
Yeah, it's similar. I mean, you know, once you got to get out at that status. You know, like, again, like,
you Ric should Flair, be there by the time you're 29 as well.
Yeah,
I'm
Ric Flair can go forever, you know, whatever. Because they're legends and all that, but yeah, you gotta get there. So
I guess sure we both can like agree that you got to be at a certain level by the time you're 27, 28, 29 in order to stay there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you are long in the tooth, and it's time you
absolutely,
get
absolutely. Yeah, it's that way. And what happened with me is actually I was working for Shawn Michaels down in San Antonio. And I was kind of, you know, I'd groom his kids, you know, like I would give them their first matches and all that, kind of go through the school with them in a way. And, you know, I was kind of going to go to WWF or WCW with them to kind of protect them from the heat that they would have for being Shawn Michaels students. And, you know, and like at that time, it was just right that when WCW closed down, Vince McMahon bought all the rights. He called in the note from ECW and absorbed them, and basically he took a monopoly. And I was like, well, the only choice was to go to Japan, but Goldberg and all them were out of work, because if you didn't work for Vince McMahon, then you were flooding Japan. It was crazy. And I was just like, you know what, God does not want me to be a wrestler. This is multiple I heard times that timing has happened.
Yeah, their lifestyles are insanity.
It's crazy.
Who's from El Paso was Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah,
I heard that guy, dude. I actually saw him when I was boxing. I went out one night with him, and I think his wife is Veronica or something like that. I forget his wife's name, but from El Paso. And I remember I went and partied with him, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That guy was doing everything, bro. Like, he beat me. I was hard to beat in the party scene. That guy was doing it all.
Yeah, it was a debaucherous lifestyle for real, man. Like, I quit several times over just the lifestyle. I mean, so I would kind of sabotage myself a few times over their careers, because I just, you know, it's like I knew, like, my first marriage with my kids, you know, my mother of my children. I mean, I could have went to WWF early 90s, and I was just like, there's no way this woman's staying married with me if I'm on the road for 320 days a year.
No way.
And that's what it was back then. It was crazy. There was no breaks.
Right.
No,
and
nothing.
You guys are not only just training hard and wrestling and doing that. Most of those guys party hard.
Oh, party hard. I mean, it's just,
you're rock stars. You're guys, you guys were rock stars.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. My first film that I ever did, like I directed and wrote, was called Wrestler's Cocktail. It's a short film. I put it in film festivals. And it's a day in the life for a pro wrestler. And it's just because Wrestler's Cocktail, if you Google it, is, you know, basically, you know, alcohol, alcohol, painkillers, muscle actors, steroids, and all that party drugs, and it just stops people's hearts. I mean, people die from cocktails all the time.
And that's what almost happened to me when I overdosed in 2011. Mm-hmm. I was popping painkillers, Adderall. Yeah. I just wanted to keep the party going, keep the high going, and I overdosed. Because I know that the lifespan of a wrestler, man, is really short. Yeah. Isn't it like 40s? Yeah. Or it could be 30s to mid-40s, right?
And these guys,
their hearts
in my up. Yeah, in my first, like I said, my film, Wrestler's Cocktail, at the beginning, it has a statistic, and it's something I can't remember. I have to look at it, but it's something about that so many wrestlers die but by the age of 50. It's like a high mortality rate by the age of 50. And it's even higher than NFL players, which has a really high mortality rate as well, you know?
Yeah, and you know, like from what I've seen in my sport, and I don't know if this goes along with wrestlers as well. I would imagine it does. But like once these guys retire and they're done, their body is so broken down and beat up. And then they're now 100% drug addicts. Like I'm talking, they're doing it all. Because the pain in their body is so bad.
It's brutal.
Fentanyl, they're on painkillers, they're still doing coke. They don't even care to die, a lot of these guys. They're just like, dude, I'm on my way out. I had my glory years. I'm good. They have nothing else to live for.
I literally, you know, being a wrestler, I kind of just, I mean, it sounds cliche and people say it, oh, I didn't expect to live this long or I would have taken better care of myself. But it's kind of true. Like, I really didn't, you know, I didn't expect to be moving around in my 50s, you know, and honestly, to be moving around, I mean, I was on pain management, legit, no drug dealers, no nothing. I mean, just straight up, you know, 90, 10, 50s a month. And just, you know, for 15 years, bro, like, it was so brutal. I didn't expect to be, you know,
and see, people doing this now. I'm a big man, but you're much bigger. You said you're 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
So just being that size and having to carry around that weight in your older years and then being put through the trenches like you were in wrestling, I mean, your body is probably it's probably feels like you've been through 20 car accidents.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels described it best on to one of his classes. I remember he was he said the rest of your life or your career is going to be like having a car accident 3 or 4 times a week. And that's the truth. I was like, damn, that is a great description. You know, and he was retired at the time. Like he wasn't up there anymore. He did eventually get to going back. He got, you know, saved and clean and worked hard. Diamond Dallas Page, my boy, DDP has saved so many people physically.
Diamond Dallas Page, damn.
Yeah, man.
I've heard of that name, yeah.
Yeah, he has DDP yoga, man. So he got me off of painkillers. Like, he.
Well, how long have you been off the painkillers? How long have you been off the painkillers?
Oh, gosh, I mean, 15 years. Yeah, I mean, something like that.
You do yoga?
10 years. Yeah, I don't do it as much.
I can't imagine you doing yoga.
He does a DDP yoga, man. It's just, you know, stretching and plyometrics and all that kind of stuff. So he actually told me, I bumped into him at the Rainbow Room on Sunset Strip in LA. Yeah. And he was just like, you know, he saw me walking toward him. We'd never met, but I don't think. And we'd our wrestler handshake that knows us know, you know, it's like we knew that he knew. And he says, oh, yeah, I knew you were a worker. He says, how many gimmicks you take a day? I was like, I don't take them every day, but when I do, three or four, you know, gimmicks being the painkillers.
Yeah.
And he says, man, I can get you off of that. I said, oh, yeah. He says, yeah, man, come over and do yoga with me in Mar Vista or like Marina Del Rey area. And I was like, really? Come on, man. Like, you ribbing me? He's like, no, man, seriously, come on.
I still can't picture you doing yoga, dude. I'm sorry.
I know, dude.
I'm trying to visualize this. It's disturbing. Yeah.
Oh, it was in a park, too. So you're out in the middle of...
Oh, my gosh.
It's a bunch of dudes.
Dude, is the Rainbow Room still, like, the go-to spot for a lot of, like... I remember that when I went there was, like, a lot of hard rockers, man, back in the day. Old actors. Like,
they're all just kind of... You walk back into the 80s, man. Like... You walk in and everybody's got the hair and the.
But it's cool, man. I always liked it.
Yeah,
I always liked the good, Rainbow Room.
I still go out there. My wife, we did a birthday, one of her birthdays there. I used to work there years ago, so I still kind of, everybody kind of knows me. And then I guess I'm one of the guys that, you know, got sort of famous or whatever, and done a lot of movies. So and
that's what, yeah. You know, for me, like, man, acting would have been a lot of hell of a lot easier than boxing, that's for sure. How did you fall into acting? I mean, so man, you have the, you know, look.
So, you know, what's funny. I actually accepted, I basically went into wrestling to become an actor. I thought it would be when I was offered that opportunity, I'm like, well, you know, I know it's bad. I mean, my dad knew the Funks and the Von Erichs and stuff when he was younger. So I knew how, and I've seen how all these old wrestlers cripple around. I was like, okay, but if I parlay this into an acting career, so I like to say I did what Dwayne Johnson did way before Dwayne Johnson did, but of course, way less successfully. Because he's huge. I mean, he's huge.
Yeah, but you're still going.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
You got that look. Do you get? I mean, obviously, you get typecasted, right?
Yeah. That's what I. You know, definitely. But my old saying is typecast me, miscast me, just freaking cast me.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. So, do you ride motorcycles? I mean, that's what you look like you do. Harleys.
I do, man. Yeah, I do. I ride every day if I can. So sure.
So absolutely. Let's talk about what you're doing now. And I think this is fascinating, folks, because everyone knows on my story, on my channel, that I've been sober now for coming up on 5 years. And that's something I never thought I'd be able to do. And also, I'm getting ready to get baptized this week. So
wow,
that's something that I'm not going to record it or put it out there or anything. I don't think that's something to do, but I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. But what is Saved Savages Ministries?
Yeah, Safe Savage Ministries, man. We call it a bar ministry with a motorcycle habit, because a lot of us are bikers in it, but it's not really a biker ministry. What it is just one day.
I'm just gonna show it while you're talking.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So what it is I God told me to one day, I just kind of spoke to me in this weird way, you know, and that I was supposed to go down into bars at 2 p.m. on Sundays and do an unchurchy church service. So I
2 p.m. or 2 a.m.
2 p.m. So yeah.
Okay, so you're going during the day.
Yep. I go to church and then I go up and say hi to my pastor, and he goes, "Where are you headed now?" I'm like, "Headed to the bar." And he's totally in full support of it. And it's grown. There's other tribes now. We call them tribes instead of chapters. But we go into these bars and we just do an unchurchy church service. And then it kind of becomes like a little tribe or a little, you know, congregation, you know, of people, man. And some of them just, a lot of people are church hurt. You know, they don't want to ever go to church again. They'll say, you know, I'll never go back to church. And
they feel judged.
Yeah. But, we meet them where they're at. You know, I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. Go ye into all the world, preach the gospel. So we go ye, you know, we go into the world. So
and, you go into the lion's den.
Yeah, man. So we go meet them where they are. And it's been crazy successful and just amazing blessing, just changed my whole life. I can't imagine never doing it again. You know, it's just, I'll do it to all that.
You're in the trenches, your boots on the ground. You go actually to the place where people actually need it the most, which is the bar scene. Do most people just brush you off? I mean, you're a huge guy. I would imagine they'd be like, well, let's listen to this guy for a few moments before we make a decision. Do they just brush you off, or do you have a lot of success going into the bars and talking to people?
It is amazingly successful. Now, most of it has been in Texas. And so maybe that, like, I'm curious, I'm going to be doing it in Burbank, you know, or somewhere in California soon. And I'm curious to whether how that's going to be, you know what I mean? But I think it's going to be the same. I mean, because California is just, you know, LA is just full of a bunch of people that left middle America to go live in Los Angeles, you know, just like me or anyone else. So I expect it to go really well.
Here's the thing that I wonder about, because when I was drinking, the last thing I wanted was to be preached to, right? You don't want a mirror held up to you. At least you don't want to be judged. Right. Like, I've noticed, like, since I've quit drinking, my friends don't call me anymore. They don't want me to be with them at the bars. I've lost a lot of friends because I'm kind of like the buzzkill. Why would they want me to go with them to the bar or anything like that? I mean, so I can imagine, especially when I was in my prime and when I was really drinking heavy, the last thing I wanted was someone to preach to me. So do you have people yelling at you or start fights with you or anything like that?
We've never had that. We've never had a bar fight at our service. Almost a couple times, but just between people that were there with us, you know? And none of that happens so far. Now I will tell you, we go to bars normally that we're invited to because they hear about it and they want us there. So the owners and everybody wants us there. We don't really go to packed out bars, you know, like biker bars that are, you know, really successful that everybody rides to where there's 200 people there, because that's just going in and I don't know. We're really there. Normally we go into a bar that, you know, at 2 p.m., the people that are there at a bar at 2 p.m., a dive bar, you know, are looking hurting for something. Yeah, they're hurting. They're looking for something. So I think probably the difference, maybe, you know, I'm assuming that when you were talking about that, you're out at nightclubs and things like that, not really at a bar.
I was womanizing. I had friends with me. I was socializing. If I was at a bar drinking during the day, I'm probably going to be pretty miserable.
Right. And that's kind of, you know, I mean, not to put, because sometimes we just go into, you know, places that pit stops where bikers roll in and all that, but it's been amazing that we've had no problems. No one wants us gone. I mean, we always end up going back. I think we've only had one bar that we didn't go back to. And honestly, we should have. We just, it just fell by the wayside, you know?
What's the difference between a minister and a pastor? I know you said you're not a pastor, but you're a minister. What's the difference?
Well, I can give my version of what the difference is. A pastor has a flock, you know, he has a church, whereas, you know, I just call myself an evangelist, I guess, you know, because I'm taking the gospel out there. I will say that, different tribes that we have more resemble a church, and we do have like one guy that runs runs one of the tribes is, we call it Pastor Don, because he pastored a church for years, a couple of churches. So he's there and, he does that. So he's a pastor and he behaves as a pastor, and that particular tribe is really tight, like a church. So, you know, I don't want to be a pastor. I mean, there's such a responsibility on it. Not going to say it. God won't make me do it one day, but he'll have to make me do it.
The bar owners, like, they accept you coming in there and preaching?
Yeah, they love it.
Really? Or do they, you've never been threatened or they try to kick you out?
No, we don't go in and ambush them. The first time, you know, I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to do this. And I said, wow, I got to find a bar now, because it was all set up, but I had to find a bar. So I'm like, how do I do this? And I said, Clint, my buddy Clint, he's crazy. Maybe he'll let me use his bar. I called him up and actually asked him to FaceTime. I'm like, hey man, trying to get him at the bar and I couldn't catch him. I said, hey man, can I FaceTime you? He's like, yeah, it's weird. Sure. But I wanted him to see, you know, and I said, hey man, can I borrow your bar at 2 p.m. on Sunday? He goes, yeah, sure, man. Like nothing. And I was like, I was like, dude, I guess I could have used it for anything. It's like that. So anyway, he says, what do you need to use it for? I said, that's why I wanted to FaceTime you. I want to do a church service.
Wow.
He said, dude, you want to use Kima Shot Bar as a church service on Sunday afternoon? I said, yeah. He goes, that's awesome. I'll cook chicken and waffles. I mean, and it's kind of always been that way, you know, and from there people started inviting us out, you know, so like, you know, people would come to us and say, hey man, this bar over here wants you to, Tipsy Turtles on Galveston wants us to do a service there.
I'm no, like, no, hold right, on. Well, do you think cool. they really want you to do the service there, or they just want you there because you're the guy they recognize in movies and you're a famous actor?
I mean, I don't think so, because a lot of them don't even know that. I mean, some of it could play something into that, and praise God if it does. But no, I think it's more they hear about it and they want to see what it's about, but they can't get there on a Sunday. And so we've had, dude, it's crazy. We've had bar managers, bartenders, bar backs just like crying and just like thanking me and hugging me and saying, thank you for coming out here. I work my schedule to where I make sure that I'm here. I mean, it is not.
Well, people really, you've noticed that these people really are crying for help.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, or even like some of the bartenders. You know, they work, like they have to work. So I can't go to church because I have to open up and all that. And, you know, and they work at night and all that. And so, I mean, to them, we're just bringing it to them, man. And they love it. They love it.
How many people do you save every time you go? Is it a large number, just a few? What's the success rate?
Oh, a big success rate. But I will tell you, you know, I mean, we baptized, I don't even know how many people, but a lot. And, you know, but I will tell you that most of it is I feel more like I'm just hurt, like we're hurting lost sheep. You know, it's like, you know, because I can't tell you how many people have told me from, hey, I used to be a pastor.
Yeah.
And or hey, I was associate pastor and I'll never step back in church again, or you know, all these stories of people that have just been church hurt and they'll never really go back to church.
What is church hurt?
Oh, church hurt. I mean, just people that have been to, I don't know, they left because gossip or left for, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, I mean, they got hurt in church. You know, they got their feelings hurt or whatever, and that's what we deal with a lot. A lot of people that just say, I'll never go back to the brick and mortar. You know, wow. And then of course some of them do. Like they some of those that said that now go to church again because of Safe Savage. You know,
for me,
and some of them never will.
Right, and I've always, and it's just I'm just speaking for myself. Like I told you, I'm going to be getting baptized. I really like going to church when it's quiet, when no one's there, and mm-hmm. praying and just sitting in silence. That's just me. That's how I like to do it. Yeah. Now, I know it's better to be in a gathering and listen to the word, but I don't know, man. Sometimes I go to church and I just feel like it's a who's who and it's a pissing contest. And it's like, you know, people are dressed in suits and I don't know, man. Especially with today's prosperity preachers, man, I have a real problem mm-hmm. with it. You know, what do you have to say about that? I mean, when I see someone like, which you're in Houston,
mm-hmm. sure,
Joel Osteen, you know,
Joel
what I mean?
Osteen, like, the go-to.
I went to service one time.
Guy,
I was like,
yeah.
Dude, I can't do this. I had to leave. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah, you know, my views. I don't go there. I don't. It's not my thing. But yeah. I don't. I don't know, man. I kind of let them do their thing. I mean, you know, within reason. I mean, if there's some kind of heresy being, you know, done. But I mean, to me, I figure there's just a church for everybody, you know. I mean, I don't expect other people to do it the way I do it. I don't judge them for doing it the way they do it. You know, I actually, the biggest revelation I think God has ever given me, he gave me this last year. And I handled a situation and I was like, Lord, how could I have in the ministry? I was like, how could I have been right and this still happened? And he was just like, at best, son. I mean, how God talks to you, just it's so bizarre unless it happens. But he says, at best, you can only be less wrong than the other guy. That's the best you can ever achieve. And so to me, I just look at it like that. It's like, there are people like, can you believe they do that? Can you believe they do that? I'm like, it's pretty messed up, but I don't know. What am I wrong about? I don't know. Because you don't usually know it until you figure it out or somebody points it out. So I don't know. I just kind of, you know, I just let it go. I mean, where do you go to church? Where do you go to church?
Well, right? I was going a lot to a Catholic mass. I've kind of switched over now. I'm going to go. I was obviously as a Catholic, you're baptized as a baby, right?
Right.
So I felt in my heart that I'm like, you know what? I want to do this with my own free will.
Sure.
I want to get back. That's what held me back from getting baptized for so long, is because everyone always told me, Catholic friends and family, well, you don't have to. You were baptized as a baby. And I go, okay, I get that. I understand it. But I kind of feel like it should be something that's done with my own free will.
I
just
agree.
Just like quitting personal drinking. It was like, that was my first step in the right direction, was to quit drinking and all the other vices that came with it. Now I feel like it's up to me. I want to show God that I'm going to make that next step. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's great, man. I agree with that. You know, I do. Cool.
Let me ask you this. When you go to these bars and you're there, how do you save someone that's there? Do you have a baby pool of water? I mean, do you baptize them there?
We have done baptisms.
Pour a cup of water?
No, we have done baptisms at bars. We've used swimming pools that people had. We've used churches, you know, that you know, like we work in conjunction with some churches sometimes, like up in Nacogdoches area. There's a cowboy church that one of the tribes works with. So a lot of times people just want to go that get baptized there. Some people want baptized in the bar. So we use kind of one of those water troughs, like the horse troughs or cow troughs. So we'll bring it to the bar, and we've got one that says Safe Savage on it and everything. And we'll fill it up with water and baptize them there at the bar. You know, our lake, you know, or the first one we ever did was at Tipsy Turtles on Galveston Island. And we had people that wanted baptized, and we had that bar that wanted us to come out, and it was on the beach. Like the bar is actually right there on the beach. So we just walked down into the ocean and baptized the people. So, yeah, I mean, we keep it. There's no routine on that. You know, I mean, we submerge, you know, complete submersion. But at the same time, somebody got saved the other night, and one of our guys led somebody to the Lord at a like a street preaching thing that we went to in some other town just to visit. And I was, you know, I was just like, well, it's raining and there's puddles of water right there, so we can do like the Ethiopian. And, you know, it's like, that's, you know, and he said, well, what's wrong with that puddle? You know, we'd have done that if he had wanted to. So
that's amazing. So, yeah. You know, my sister, I lost my sister to alcoholism. And that was about 14 years ago. And I remember in her last years, you know, she was one of those people that was going to the bars during the day. Mm-hmm. And she was polishing off a bottle of vodka in the morning, and she died at 44. But I remember in her last days, she was finally listening to one of my friends. His name was Freddie. He passed away as well 2 years later. But he was preaching to her and ministering to her in her last couple months, and that's when she really started absorbing the Bible, was when she was really sick and hurting, and we knew she was on her way out. I wish she would have listened earlier. But do you ever come across people like that are in the bars that are sick, and you know that they have cirrhosis, or they're getting ready, they're on their way out, and
we've lost
their life to the Lord?
We've lost Safe Savages, you know, over the last 4 years that you know, died of cirrhosis or cancer of the liver and things like that. And but, you know, I mean, man, like that I'm going to tell you, to speak as vague as I can, but like that particular, a particular story, you know, is a guy that, you know, drank a lot at the bars and all that kind of stuff. You know, ex-musician, you know, rock guy. But man, like I watched him just go from, you know, that to over the couple of years to writing Christian songs that people are still singing right now, you know, just, and then, you know, having such peace with where he was going, you know. So yeah, we've had it happen. We've had it happen quite a few times, you know. Yeah, it's wild, and it's the most moving. I mean, I can't even believe I'm a part of it. I feel like a participating spectator. You know, because I can't even believe I'm witnessing all this stuff that I'm involved in so heavily. So it's pretty wild, man. It's a wild experience. I'll never not do it. I can't see me ever not doing it. God will have to really shove me into another lane or move me somewhere, you know, into something else for me not to be doing Safe Savage.
All I can say, Randall, is It's awesome to talk to such a powerful man of God, and you're using your success for this. It's an amazing thing for me and for my audience. I had a friend that just passed away last year, my buddy Sammy, who was an alcoholic, and he in his last years, man, I would talk to him a little bit about God and in church. I probably could have done a lot more, but I was still in the midst of trying to save my own life, and I just remember a lot of these people, what they have in common, they don't want to hear anything. They're just upset. Right. They're angry at God. They feel like, how can I drink just as much as anybody else, just as much as David? Why am I sick? And they're mad. And they're mad. Yeah. And rightfully so. Mm-hmm. How do you get across to someone like that? Like, let's say my buddy Sammy could have used this. How could you have got to him? How could you have struck a nerve? Because he just did not want to listen to anybody in his life.
I mean, ultimately, like, we can't really do any of it. It's the Holy Spirit, you know, like, they have to be ripe and ready and all that. You know, what Jesus said, you know, none come to the Father, or none come to me except not led, you know, like, brought to by the Father. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Right. Like the Father calls them to him, you know? So, you know, it's the Holy Spirit has to lead us to that. That being said, I mean, I don't know. I mean, when we go in, we come in love, you know. I mean, we're not teetotalers. Some of us still drink, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't go. We have a real strict no drunk get drunk policy, you know. But you know, I mean, that helps, you know. I think that, you know, people, you know, 20, 30, 40, 60 of us roll in, and you know, it's the best Sunday that bar's ever had, because there's still, you know, some beers being had, and
so do you guys. You guys
drinks being had, and
you guys go to different towns, different cities.
Yeah.
Are they far or just in the vicinity of each other?
If it's too far, we kind of start a new tribe. You know, that's kind of like, you know, if we're going too far, you know, we're going 40 miles, then, you know, or something, then, because it's hard to get everyone to roll over there, and it's just kind of breaks off into a new tribe. And that's kind of what, I mean, that's early church, man. I mean, you're talking about these mega churches and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's not really, I mean, I'm not against mega churches personally. I'm not against those pastors doing, you know, secret churches, all that. I mean, there's something to be said for that, just like there's something to be said for what we do. But to me, you know, I can't imagine me ever doing it. If my church just got so big, I would just be like, well, why don't we just have six different churches? You know, why don't we just buy a building over there where these guys can just go and raise up a pastor there? I mean, that's what I think I would do. But again, you know, I'm not God.
I think I have an idea.
I'm not even close.
I have an idea for you. I was just talking to my buddy, Brad Olson, who's he goes to the Burning Man festivals, the art festivals. Right. And I was like, you know, and I just did a podcast with him yesterday. I'm going to put that up tomorrow. And it's when you go to these Burning Man festivals, man, it's like a lot of lost youth. Right. And a lot of this Burning Man festival has turned into a new age religion.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's
did he go preach there this time?
See, I was asking him that. I was just going to get to that with you. So I they welcome everybody, right? And I was like, well, where's the Christians? Where's the evangelists? I go, why aren't there tents set up where they could preach? He goes, everyone's there. He goes, I've never seen that. Have you tried to reach out to that?
Nope, but I might next year, bro. I mean, why not?
Let me tell you, it's filled with youth that they're all on drugs. They're all not. I mean, everyone does what they want there, right? I mean, it's supposedly a place for everybody, but I didn't see anything that had. I saw a lot of demonic symbology in the pictures. I saw a lot of that. I did not see anything that represented Christ there at all. So I think that would be an awesome.
That's a great idea.
Go to Burning Man, dude. I'll go with you.
That's a great idea. Well, I'm probably
going to be there next year.
I was just about to say, man. So yeah, let's just, you know, I will look into a space, and that's an interesting thing. I've never been. I worked a bunch of parties for people that were, you know, like burners, you know, that were going there, but I've never been, never really wanted to. But yeah, I'll go. We'll do that, man.
I'd be so curious.
And I want to come to do one in you're in El Paso, right?
Yeah, come on down here, dude.
Man, we'll come to a safe savage out in El Paso, bro.
Yeah, man. What's a biker gang from El Paso? Is it the Bandidos or what?
I mean, they kind of run. They're the big dogs.
All they're right, the so
big,
they're not like the El Paso. I know they have a chapter all, here.
Yeah, sure. they got chapters there. they run. Yeah, Texas is full of them. Absolutely.
Well, Randall, man, I appreciate you coming on. Randall Reeder, man,
thanks
everybody.
Thanks for having me, dude.
Yeah, this has been awesome, man. The Saved Savages Ministries.
Save Savage Ministries.
Yeah, give them a what's your YouTube? It's Randall Reeder, or is it Save Savage Ministries?
Yeah, Randall Reeder. We've got Save Savage Ministries YouTube. We've got all over Facebook. Most any Save Savage is going to pop up with being us, you know, from Save Savage to Save Savage Ministry, Save Savage Sunday Service, Bay Areas and Piney Woods and all these tribes. So, yeah, it should be easy to find. Save Savage Ministries or Save Savage should pop up.
What other movies are you working on right now?
Save Savage Films is trying to put together a movie called The Baptist that I'm really excited about. I believe God told me to do it, and I've been sitting on the script for years. I didn't write it. Somebody wrote it and for me years ago, and it's just been sitting there, and it's time to do it. It's, you know, it's just God's timing. And then do another series. I did that one Sons of Thunder for Pure Flix, and it was a little like I'm never going to do another Sons of Thunder with them. They've gone through changes and all that. So, you know, got one called Nomad that we're developing. And possibly going to pre-production in the next month or so.
So let me ask you one last question before I let you go. Mm-hmm. I've always been curious about this. So now that you have that look, and you've been in quite a few films, do they just call you now, or do you still have to go out for auditions?
I do tape. Like I haven't done auditions in years. I mean, I do auditions, but it's more I just have to record it. You know, so I'll have somebody record me on my phone and have somebody read with me, and I send it in. So, but that some of that is because it changed. After, you know, they really
and
never.
I bet you can do it over Zoom now too.
Yeah, that's it. I've done Zooms. I've done callbacks on Zooms. So yeah, or you know, network stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. So
things have changed, man.
Changed everything, bro. I mean, look at this. Like we're in the same room.
Yeah, it's but crazy. We're not. And this all really started in 2020. Dude, I didn't even know how to work a Zoom until 2020. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't either.
It's just crazy. It's just evolved, man.
Yeah.
Well, Randall, thank you for joining me, brother.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah.
I'm seriously a fan. Like
I'm a fan of you.
Seriously. When he told me about you, I'm like, dude, no way. The boxer? Like, yes, I'll do his show. So, yeah.
Hell yeah. No, that's awesome, man.
Plus, we're, you know. The boxer.
I'm gonna go watch Deadpool just so I can watch you. You know that, right?
I said the boxer that's a conspiracy theorist. <It's> like, the that's me. I know. I'm glad that we avoid. Dude, we dodged a bullet on 9/11. We didn't get into conspiracy. Thank you, Lord.
No, I wanted this to go on YouTube, and I think the Save Savage Ministries is like all we needed to talk about, and that's where God led us. And I think that was enough.
All right, brother. Well. I'll see you in person sometime soon, man.
Let's stay in touch, man.
I've been telling you, man. I usually stay right there at Las Cruces or whatever when I drive. I like to drive a lot.
Do you ever go to Mesilla, Old Mesilla?
No,
dude. I'll take you there.
But I
you come
but
through
that's
town.
Half,
I'll take you
the
there.
Halfway. That's my halfway point. Either there or Albuquerque, depending on if I'm going.
Dude,
to
hit me up,
or
man. Hit me up, and I'll take you to Old Mesilla, and we'll have a good steak.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
All right, man. Later.
God bless.